welcome to Weather Mag and Focus. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with Bridget Greedo this afternoon. We've got a lot of clouds around, and there's a few light showers in the far northern valley, and also a few light showers right along the South Dakota border. But other than that, we're really not looking at a whole lot of rain throughout the area. But we will see some more showers and even embedded thunderstorms developing in Lakes Country as we head into the afternoon. Bridget, how's your day going so far, and how much rain did you get overnight?
You know, I heard a lot of thunder and lightning, but not that much rainfall as of 6 a.m. this morning. There wasn't a lot. And we'll see what comes of this. I was hoping at least on the north of I-94, we'd probably see a good half inch come out of it. I don't think we're there yet. I will keep an eye on my Darter Plastics rain gauge. That is National Weather Service approved from WDAY. You can win those on Wednesday Weather Trivia to see if I can get that half inch of rainfall or not. But everybody's on the road today. We're all seeing different things. It's going to be a busy day just trying to keep up not only with rain showers, but all the other activities that are happening in the region.
Right, right. And we've got, I was just on Merlin's farm. We were looking at his longhorns, and I'll tell you what, he said he could use a little bit more rain as well, along with everybody else. And there is some in the forecast, but I'll tell you what, after only picking up less than a tenth of an inch across much of the area, I'm not seeing much more than about an additional tenth of an inch for today, tonight, and tomorrow. We do have scattered showers that will be continuing to develop, like I said, for the rest of the afternoon today, with highs only right around 70 degrees. And it is going to be a little breezy out there as well, with winds out of the north at about 15 to 25. Then tonight, we're looking at a few isolated showers, but nothing widespread, with lows in the mid to upper 50s. And tomorrow, more of the same, a lot of cloud cover, only an isolated shower or two, not expecting much, with highs only in the upper 60s tomorrow. Kind of chilly, and you factor in that north wind tomorrow, it's going to feel a little more like fall than it is going into the third week in July. And then we'll start to warm things up on Thursday. Thursday's the pick day of the week, an absolute beauty, with sunshine, light winds, and highs in the mid to upper 70s. And then as we head into Friday, more clouds. I think a better chance of a little more widespread rain on Friday, with highs falling back into the 70s. And the weekend right now looks okay, with temperatures generally between about 80 and 85, with another chance of rain as we head into early next week. So there's rain in the forecast, but just nothing really widespread. But I was taking a look at some of our long-term models, and over the next week to 10 days, we've got quite a few chances for rain, and probably going to pick up over the next week to week and a half, probably about an inch to an inch and a half of rain across much of the area.
Well, that would be all right. And okay, there's an old wives' tale out there that says, on days like today that are so cool that we can't get tornadic activity out of this, we could maybe get hail but not tornadoes. Is there any real science behind that type of a question?
Well, there is some validity to it. It's not impossible to get tornadoes when it's this chilly. You have to have other factors that come together. Now, some areas that will get possibility of some severe weather, Lakes Country southward, let's say Alex to Brainerd and points south of there. But that's because the cold front, which is pressed through our area, is kind of stalling over Lakes Country. So you're kind of getting a little more favorable activity for severe weather and possible tornadoes into Lakes Country. But not for us. We should be good.
So the other question I have is, tomorrow we're going to be doing this show live from our Here We Grow Wheat Field out near Gardner, North Dakota. I'm packing lawn chairs and the whole nine yards to literally sit in our wheat field to do the show. So is it going to rain tomorrow, Dean?
Are you sure we're doing it in the wheat field, or are we going to be out there in umbrellas?
My lawn chair, I have a double set lawn chair that actually comes with an umbrella that hangs over the top of it. So if it's not terribly windy, I can actually do this.
Okay. Now, you know what? It's kind of like today. We might have to dodge a few isolated showers, but I don't see anything I don't see anything too steady or too heavy tomorrow.
All right.
So I should be able to pull it off.
Making a post-it note for myself right now. Rain slicker umbrellas. Okay, got it. Because, you know, a little lightning storm with some umbrellas. Let's add some excitement to our regular day of weather and Ag and Focus. What could go wrong?
Let's stay away from the lightning.
Dean doesn't want to live on the edge. Well, well. All right. As some of you are driving down the road this time of the year, you're seeing some yellow flowers, as you might think of them, in our ditches. Now, let me just reiterate that if you see a blooming yellow field, canola. Later this season, tall blooming yellow fields, sunflowers. Right now in the ditches, you might see some goldenrod that's a bright yellow. But if you see a dull yellow roundish head with, it's got a lot of bracts and a lot of small flowers that comprise that actual yellow flower head, that could be leafy spurge. Leafy spurge is a noxious weed, and in both the Dakotas as well as Minnesota, it is actually a legal obligation by the landowner to control it. Leafy spurge first arrived in the United States. People thought it was a beautiful ornamental and they used it in their yards, but it got out of hand. Same thing happened with purple loosestrife and other weeds that we now have on our noxious weed list. So when it comes to leafy spurge, we're hitting the tail end of good application season for herbicides. The best timing is usually mid-June until right about now. We want to get on these applications very quickly to control the weed because viable seed is about to be set, and then the seed falls to the ground and it's going to hang around there for quite some time. Leafy spurge can be controlled fairly easily by 2,4-D and Tordon. Its active ingredient is picloram. Now, just like in-field discussions where I really want people to change up their modes of action, do something different so we're not continuously repeating over and over again, I would encourage the same thing when we're treating pasture, rangeland, ditches, rights of way, etc., and we're going after leafy spurge. We can do that by using something out of the group 2 mode of action, and that's an ALS inhibitor. The active ingredient is imazapic, and it's sold under the brand name Plateau. You could also use a group 14, which is a PPO inhibitor, and that is a product called saflufacinil. Excuse me, I always have to slow down for that one. And it's sold under the brand name Sharpen. So, yes, that's our word of the day. Addison, Dean, saflufenacil. There we go. Saflufenacil. How many times can y'all work that in? Also, spelling counts. Okay, so now that we have a couple of ideas. Well, now that you got a couple of ideas what you can use, it's time to start thinking ahead about getting that sprayed, because if we leave leafy spurge in our roadsides when we bale that hay or if we have it in our rangeland, cattle don't like it. Now, if there was nothing else to eat and they ingested a tremendous amount of it, it could be fatal if it's consumed at a high volume, but that's a lot. And for the most part, cows, they're not dumb. They're kind of like us at a buffet. They're going to nose around and find the things that they like more so than maybe eating something like leafy spurge. So make those plans. Get on out there. Be ready for custom application. Also, be ready for the fact that today we have a myriad of guests. We're going to be joined by 3 interns who have worked for My Ag Data this summer. Some of you have heard the discussion about My Ag Data. But what do their interns do? Especially 3 of them stationed throughout the Midwest. Well, we're going to ask those questions. We've got Micah in studio. Also, we're going to have Haley. She'll be on the phone with us today, and Paul as well. So we're going to learn more about what they've done over the summer months when we continue after the American Ag Network Livestock Market Update. Stay tuned. Send any questions you have to 701-293-9000. The JL Insurance phone line. You can send emails agorweather@flagfamily.com and watch the fun and chaos. And that happens on our live streams, WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus, Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV. Thanks for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus. It's an overcast kind of a day here in North Dakota, but that's not the end of the world. Lots to learn, especially from our guests today. We have 3 interns from My Ag Data, and that is Micah Lundblad, we have Haley Frezel, and we have Paul Olson. And so, folks, I've got lots of questions for you. Dean probably does as well. But I'm going to start with Micah, who is brave soul, who's holding down the fort at the studio today while everybody else is on location somewhere. Micah, thanks for being there.
Yeah, Bridget, it's kind of empty here.
You get the whole place to yourself. You got to choose your favorite chair and everything.
Yeah, yeah, it was nice.
Good. All right, so I've got some questions for you. Give us a little bit of background about yourself. Where are you from? Your major in school, those types of things.
Yeah, so I'm Michael Lumblad. I go to NDSU for Precision Ag and then another degree in Crop and Weed Science. I'm from Western North Dakota, family farms and ranches in Killdeer area, and then I actually went to school in Bismarck, but spent all my time I could out at the ranch.
And well, Micah, what, in terms of NDSU, what year are you in there, and what do you plan on doing after you graduate?
Yeah, so I'm going into my junior year here at NDSU, and that's a question I have for myself, too, kind of. Enjoy agriculture as a whole. Would love to go back and farm, but see what God and everything has planned for me, kind of, is what I'm at.
Well, if he's able to hold down the studio for us today, Dean, he may have a future in broadcasting. You just never know.
He wants to make way more money than that. Come on.
We give up the money for the fun, Micah, just so you know. That's what it's about here. So, Paul Olson is also an NDSU grad, but not an ag major. Paul, tell us your background.
Yeah, so I'm from just south of Fargo, and then I came here for college. I just graduated with my degree in Management Information Systems, and I'll be going back to school in the fall for the Master's of Business Admin program, and yeah, I'm excited about it.
Paul, information management systems. Okay, I must have graduated before that occurred. Tell me what that is.
Yeah, basically, I do a lot in school with like databases and just kind of making systems better. And I was able to do some of that this summer with my Ag Data, just kind of finding out ways to automate some of their systems and just help make everything more efficient.
Okay, not necessarily having an ag background, do you want to learn more and be more active in the ag industry after an internship like this?
Yeah, I definitely think it would be something I would consider. Like you said, I didn't grow up on a family farm or anything, but I know a lot of farmers from my hometown, and it's always they're always happy people, you know, just. They're good people to be around, so I thought it would be fun to kind of get to know some of them and be in the industry a little bit.
I like that you say always happy people, because Dean, he obviously has never been around farmers on their fifth rainy day in a row in the middle of harvest.
Well, that's true.
But I appreciate the optimism, so. All right. Haley, you've been hanging out in the background. Give us a little of background on you.
Yeah, so I'm going to SDSU for Ag Sciences. I actually currently live in North Dakota. I grew up in Washington State on my family's farm.
Okay, hold on. first of all, I'm going to let that going to SDSU thing slide for right now. We'll get back to that later, just because I want to harass the jackrabbits in the audience. Washington State to the Dakotas. How and why?
I don't really know how. I came for a tour last winter and moved in August. I've been here ever since. And it just felt right and still does. So here I am.
All right.
Haley, what kind of farming did your family do out in Washington State?
Yeah, I have helped raise cattle, and then we're primarily alfalfa grass hay. We used to do a little bit more wheat, oats, barley, and have since transitioned to less grain crops.
Okay, knowing Paul's in Eastern North Dakota, knowing Micah's in Western North Dakota, where in Washington State? Are you more towards the eastern side of Washington, away from the coast?
I am very much eastern and very much northern. I'm about 30 minutes away from Idaho and an hour from Canada.
Hey, that hour from Canada, that feels about right. I can see why you didn't mind this change at all. Okay, as we think about what you guys did for my egg data this summer, first question has to be, and I will pose this to Paul, when you talked to customers, how did you describe my egg data to them this summer? And when other people said, who are you working for? What was your elevator speech, you might say, on my egg data?
Yeah, what I would tell them is that we're an online acreage reporting company. We're kind of one of the only ones, if not the only one, in the field right now. So kind of a unique opportunity, and we just take the data from the fields and use it to make their acreage report, which gets sent to the FSA offices and to crop insurance and can help you save money and save time on everything. So it's a really good opportunity for the farmers.
Were you, as a guy who's a information specialist, were you on the front lines talking directly to farmers or a little more in the background getting some of that work done that other folks were taking care of up front?
I think a little bit of both. That was kind of the nice thing about the internship was we kind of got a well-rounded view of the company. We got to do a little bit on the front lines, a little bit on the data curation side of things, and it was just kind of a well-rounded experience.
Well, I would say that there was probably a lot of learning moments that went along with that as well. And in that data information space, I think if you didn't have a chance to hear our guest yesterday, Chris Sherman with Tech Support Farm, I'd encourage you to go back because right now with all of the data and cyber security around it, you are probably poised to see some very exciting things about ready to explode in a way that you didn't even expect now that we have certainly focused on the fact that food security is national security. And maybe you hadn't heard that statement yet, Paul.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of interesting things happening with technology right now. I mean, this company is a testament to it. A lot of things are going online that weren't before. So it's definitely important to make sure everything is safe and away from the wrong hands.
Well, and we're looking forward to hearing how this secure software can help our farmers do an excellent job of reporting to a number of places. There's a deadline coming up. Oh, hang on. It might be sooner than we think. We're going to talk about that when we return from our news. When we come back, we'll have more of our discussion with interns that we're highlighting from the My Egg Data Company this summer.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, 1:34 in the afternoon. Temperatures right around the 70 degree mark across the area. And we've got some of the best and brightest interns joining us today. And Haley and Micah, got a question for you guys. What would you say is the biggest thing you've learned from your internship that you guys had this summer? And Micah, if you want to go first.
Okay, yeah, I guess the biggest thing that I've learned from this internship is that connections are key, just forming those connections and being good to all the producers and growers that you meet. It's very easy to ruin a partnership or ruin your name, but it's really hard to build a name. So you start out with the producer or grower and you just introduce yourself and continue to be a good person to them, that you're going to go far. But if you're the opposite, you're going to ruin that relationship very quickly and your name's going to get passed around to someone that's not trustworthy or not a person you want to deal with.
Definitely connections that were made, but I've learned a lot of everything. Being primarily hay crops, I was very unfamiliar with acreage reporting in general. So I've been here since January, and I've learned so much about that, working with FSA, working with growers, agriculture across the country. It's been amazing to learn all of that.
So based on that, Haley, do you feel like you're a little bit of an expert when it comes to giving advice to others about their acreage reporting these days?
Not an expert. I would say I'm definitely more comfortable than a month ago.
That I can understand. And I really want to commend Micah for what you said about when you're working in ag and truthfully any industry, all you really have is your name and reputation, and making sure that you follow through on what you say you're going to do, gives you that opportunity to build your reputation. And especially if you're thinking about staying in ag or going farming, Micah, I think that's probably something that'll serve you well. I hope that's a lesson you've learned throughout your years of growing up on the ranch.
Yeah, it definitely is, Bridget. And I think, too, to, like, again, with Haley, it's like, I didn't know much about acreage reporting before this. Like, I knew the paper maps that we all see, but definitely getting to actually work with them and see how we as a company deal with them has been nice, and just being able to talk with producers in different areas has been beneficial, just to see how they do things differently, and just been very blessed to do that.
So let's talk specifically what you did this summer. Paul mentioned that he had a lot of work to help provide efficiencies, backups, improvements, etc. So Micah and Haley, did you do the same thing? And if not, Haley, I'll have you start. How did what you guys do differ from each other?
For sure. I think Paul definitely did a lot more of the background technology stuff than I did, which is completely great because I am not an expert. I worked a lot with National FSA and all of the FSA county offices getting CLUs, so the common land units that the FSA uses to report your data. I talked to a lot of growers. I did a lot of grower outreach, especially in the last couple weeks of we have neared the deadline that is today. And then still some data curation, creating maps, and all of that stuff too.
So you mentioned the deadlines today. Paul, what if there's a farmer out there that's thinking, do I still have time? Could I get this done before 6 o'clock tonight? Or what are the details that they would need to know in order to get their acreage reporting completed at FSA?
If they wanted it done tonight, I would say reach out as soon as possible. But I think we probably have the manpower to get a couple of them done tonight, yeah.
The streamlining that MyAgData has made in this process is tremendously helpful for so many of our growers. And as Haley mentioned, a variety of cropping systems as well. So if you are someone who has to get to 3 different counties and report multiple crops, particularly something that can happen here in North Dakota and Minnesota, it's extremely helpful to be able to use MyAgData in order for that to happen in a timely fashion. But the use of software and technology might spark some questions, such as, Micah, you mentioned you might want to go back to take over your family operation in the next couple of years. If that's the case, based on what you learned this summer, and even using MyAgData, what are some changes you could see that could be made to make your farm operation more efficient?
Yeah, definitely. Like implementing stuff and companies like MyAgData to help our family farm, definitely a big thing is we're coming from Western side of the state, more cattle, we don't have as much precision ag equipment, and that's one reason I kind of went for the degree I did, of just getting that implemented in. As everyone knows how easy auto steer is nowadays, and there's a lot of people that won't even farm without auto steer, but you look in the 90s, people were like, why would you want auto steer? So I think that's going to, companies like MyAgData and this electronic acreage reporting is going to turn into that in the upcoming years, where farmers are like, I don't know what I would do without it. That it's just going to streamline.
I would say the streamlining is a big deal. And, you know, Dean, you heard Micah mention that auto steer. Who would have thought it was a big deal? Because, frankly, in the 90s, it wasn't. The fact that, well, I already know how to drive my tractor. I don't need somebody else to do it. But it's come to the point that it has made us so much more efficient without having overlaps in the field where we're not double seeding, we're not over applying herbicide or fertilizer. That really has become a much better situation for us. And you're exactly right. Things like MyAgData will help us to make those improvements every single day in our operations. As we think about the future, Paul, you're looking at graduating very soon. And in that instance, how could this internship fit into your graduation plans?
Yeah, I did graduate this past spring with my undergrad degree, and then I'll be going back for another couple of years. But I think just being able to understand how a company runs and seeing all different sides of it is going to really allow me to kind of know what to do in any situation that it comes before me. And then like we were talking about earlier with the agriculture background too, like that's just another door that opened that probably wouldn't have opened for me had I not come into this internship. So I'm really, really excited for whatever the future holds.
Should future employers be asking me for your name and phone number later so that this job opportunity doesn't pass you by, Paul?
If they want to.
You missed your opportunity to say, I'll be sharing my resume that you can post on our website. Because we like to highlight the youth in our show. We like to make sure that folks know what companies you're working for, what you're doing as an intern, and how it affects you as you move forward in your plans and for your career, et cetera. And so, Haley, you said your background was a lot more in livestock. What are two or three things that you picked up this summer that were really surprising in your internship?
Oh, that's a great question. I think just the use of precision ag in general, it's not something I grew up with. We're in the hill country. We've got weird shaped fields. We have trees. Drones don't even work in our area. So just the way that people are using that data to actually apply it to something more than just planting or plowing is definitely been one thing. And then the ins and outs of FSA and their requirements with reporting as well has been something new.
Well, I know this is probably a terrible question to ask, but who wants a government job now? Hands up, because actually the opportunities are there. You just never know how it may work for you and your benefit to your benefit. So, I appreciate y'all coming in to take some time to visit with us today to share what you learned, and hopefully, as your summer progresses, you have some benefit from this job as you look forward to your next part of your college career or your future career. And what's that deadline that people need to be aware of? Shout it out.
Today.
Today. Today is the, and what's the website they
Yeah,
should go to? The MyAg Data website, guys. What is that?
nobody else? Okay, I can answer. MyAgData.com.
Right. Well, we appreciate you guys taking the time to be with us today. Dean and I have a little recap to do on some weather as well as news headlines, and we're going to do that in just a few minutes when we come back.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:49 in the afternoon. Temperatures currently hanging right around that 70-degree mark. There's a few light sprinkles out there across much of the area. Could have some stronger storms as we head into later in the afternoon, especially Lakes Country southward. So if you're heading south on 94, let's say going down towards the cities, you might run into some of those strong to possibly severe storms, but we don't have to worry about that here in the valley, but we will see a few light scattered showers. But if you're looking for good drenching, not gonna happen, unfortunately. I know we could use a little bit of rain. We're still a little bit behind, but we'll catch up over the next 10 to 14 days.
Well, as long as we don't have to catch up just strictly tomorrow, again, while I'm sitting in a wheat field with an umbrella in my lawn chair.
I think it'll be okay. I think it'll be okay.
When people say, "Do you ever do live shows?" I don't think they envision that. I really don't think they do. Oh well. Now, something that I do want to make sure is, since we are going to be out in the wheat field tomorrow, just a heads up for listeners who have been following our Here We Grow Wheat Field on YouTube as well as on our Facebook page. We will have a video coming out very shortly with Codico Fuels. Codico is one of our sponsors for Here We Grow. Codico Fuels and Propane make sure that your farm stays running all times of the year, whether it's on bulk oils, bulk fuels, propane for corn dryers, home heating, shops, etc. So Codico Fuels is there for you, and they're in the neighborhood right where our field is at as well. And then additionally, Ellings & Company, because if Dean says we're getting a lot of rain, hopefully it's not too much rain that we'd have to worry about running our tile pumps. most places, those tile pumps have done their job very nicely, but they have not been overly maxed out. We have years where it feels like those pumps just don't ever turn off, and this is not necessarily one. But thank you to Ellings and Companies for being a part of our project. Now, we're raising wheat. We've never raised cotton, although I did create quite a bevy of questions back in about February when I saw a John Deere cotton picker on a semi here in Fargo. What's going on in the cotton market is where this all leads to. And it's not awesome. USDA shows Texas producers produce about 42% of our country's cotton. And right now, nearly 68% of the state of Texas is dealing with some level of drought, which has quickly turned to flood in some of those areas. So our crop is in not great shape. On top of that, our overall global markets are looking pretty poor. Cotton prices have gotten so very low and a tremendous dwindling in demand. There's a lot of competition from synthetic fibers. So for all of us who like our workout gear that have these awesome synthetic fibers that are very breathable, etc., that's a decrease in our cotton market overall across the U.S. So we're seeing less demand. Trade wars have an impact because, believe it or not, cotton is one of the products most often purchased by China that gets used in a variety of textiles. So with lower demand, a trade war, and we're seeing much higher input costs. That really awesome looking cotton picker that I saw in Fargo earlier this winter, well, that thing by itself without adding headers and anything special to it is easily about a $1.3 million machine.
Ooh.
That's a new one. Trade-ins aren't exactly cheaper either. If I remember right, John Deere has said that a cotton picker is its most expensive and most complex piece of equipment to build. It has the most moving parts, etc. So cotton pickers take a lot of work to get done. And right now, National Cotton Council, the NCC, is doing their best to try to increase the in-country demand for cotton without having to think about what's going on globally. We want to really see a big increase in domestic cotton. One of the issues we have is not much American-grown cotton is being milled even here in the United States. 20 years ago, 6.7 million bales were used by U.S. cotton mills. Here, in the last year, we've used just 1.7 million. That's a tremendous decrease in the amount of domestic cotton that we have used. So that's one of the things we've got to keep in mind is when people are buying cotton-based fabrics, please look for the USA Real Cotton brands and logos on it, because then we know that it was raised right here in the U.S. But it's getting more and more difficult for us to find that brand because there's just not as much demand for it either. I don't know. Have you ever seen cotton bowls or a cotton in a field, Dean?
Yeah, I have. Yep. Yeah. Big in the South, obviously.
Yes. I usually start seeing it in about the southern half of Kansas as I move south. Really great big bowls. And when people talk about harvesting it, why it's so complex, the seeds are interwoven in that white bowl of cotton, and they're difficult to extract. That was the reason that the cotton gin was first invented, is because people had used to do that by hand. Believe it or not, though, cotton seed is actually a pretty good cattle feed. So if you can get it, that's a supplemental use for it. But it's not so easy to get anymore. I wish everybody the best of luck with cotton.
Now, do you think production and all that will change over the next few years, or is this just a temporary kind of setback?
We've been on a strong decline for quite some time. I think it will change if we can really increase our domestic cotton demand. Part of that may happen with trade wars. We'll see if that means that people turn inward and using it more. But really, the thing that would probably change that is the fact that synthetic fibers are so much used and thought of that folks just aren't using cotton. They're using that in favor. Well, a lot of that synthetic fiber comes from overseas. So how much will that price change? Just yesterday it was announced that if the August 1st tariffs go into effect, we'll see a 17% increase in tomatoes because of the tariffs coming out of Mexico. So get your tomatoes now for your guacamole from Mexico. Some of us put tomatoes in our guac. So yes, got to keep an eye on those trade tariffs, what's going to be affecting them most closely.
Right.
So also with this weather that we're having, you know, a little bit of moisture isn't bad. We've had quite a bit more humidity as of late. With that humidity comes the potential for white mold. So bear that in mind, that if you are thinking about doing some spraying for white mold, whether it is in your canola, in your soybeans, but also especially in your dry beans, there are several products out there for white mold control. One is from Summit Agro. It's called Rev, and you're going to want to check out Rev. It not only has a systemic fungicide within it, but then additionally it uses something called the tea tree extract. This is, Rev Gen. And with that tea tree extract, what it does is it enables the cell to the disruption of cell membranes to inhibit those spores from taking control in that plant for white mold. So there you go. Tea tree extract with difenkazole. And that's a fungicide from Summit Agro. There, I've managed to put in as many active ingredient names into this show as I possibly can. Yes, the spelling check on that.
Yeah, we're having a spelling bee here before the day's done.
Safflufenacel. There, I finally got to spit it out without having to stumble.
Addison, can you spell that for $100?
Don't ask me to spell things while I'm eating a Twizzler.
Also, Addison would like to see the $100 before he starts spelling anything.
Yeah, can I get visual confirmation on that?
Well, look forward to tomorrow with Wednesday Weather Trivia. We'll be giving away one of our Darter Plastics rain gauges. Those are an outstanding rain gauge brought to us from Darter Plastics. And the best thing is they fit in with what the National Weather Service is looking for as well.
Yeah, and we are seeing increasing showers now on radar, stretching from Fergus through Wahpeton, down towards the Hankinson area, and points south from there towards Webster. And as you get into Lakes Country, and as I said earlier, from about Alex up through about the Brainerd area and points south from that, could see some severe storms this afternoon, so we'll be keeping a close eye on radar for you for that. So for Bridget and myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.